Welcome to the WFO Life Podcast. Buckle up for interviews, insights, and practical discussions, and the occasional intellectual oddity, all designed to help you master self, master craft, and accomplish any life mission.
Hey, and welcome back to the WFO Life Podcast. Dr. William Curtis here, along with co-host Chris Story. We are covering a cool topic today on emotional intelligence, but before that, I want to remind everyone, if you have been listening to our program and are getting a kick out of some of the topics we cover, especially maybe the topics on personal leadership, personal development, and maybe some of the stoic topics we've covered, hey, go into the Future Focus Health Network. We'll put the link in the show notes and let us know that you listen, and maybe go to the website and, you know, follow this page. This is something that helps us reach more people, helps us understand if our topics are meaningful for you. And before we get into the show, I just wanted to mention that we really appreciate your feedback, and I've really enjoyed the folks that have tagged along and followed us and given us some feedback on the episodes that we've done. So Chris, again, you found a topic on emotional intelligence, but before we get into that, how are you doing?
Doing great, just trying to assimilate to the new old normal, I guess, with going into the office every day. So that's been interesting, especially I work in a hybrid military and civilian environment, and the military is in 100%, and the civilians are in about 25% capacity. So it's still like a three quarters empty building, but we're coming in every day. So
So you're having to come into the office now.
Yeah, so we're coming in, but the majority of our workforce is still working virtually.
Yeah.
So, I think the transition is going to be a challenge, because when we were all virtual, everybody got used to using Zoom and Microsoft Teams and some other, DoD resources. But now that some of us can collaborate in person, but then others, you can't leave out, two or three out of the team if you have a topic that they need to collaborate on. So I think we're kind of in a new normal, trying to get everybody to still do the same work when we're working in a combination of virtual and brick and mortar environment. So
we're kind of the same way, yeah, in our medical office, except there's still a few things I'm just not sure when they're going to go away, if ever. Like, yeah, for instance, I run a primary care office, but it's not necessarily an urgent care office. And so what we do is now we're in a situation where masks are optional, that type of thing.
Yeah.
But what we've done is we don't allow truly, obviously sick people in the office. So like we still have a sort of a screening process, and we do virtual medicine for things that could be respiratory infections, COVID-like, things like that. Although we really haven't seen a lot of COVID in quite a while now, it's still something that, as we get into the cold and flu season, we're going to keep an eye out for. But so it's interesting. We're sort of more relaxed in a sense that we're not all wearing masks and things like that, and patients have the option. But at the same time, we're not really allowing sick people in the office. And I'm not really sure, whether that's going to go away or not. It's like you said, it could be that new normal for a medical office like ours, where we're not necessarily an urgent care or an ER. We're more of a, how do you get your primary care? How do you manage your diabetes? Things like that. So we're not as geared to taking care of, acutely sick patients. So I don't know. It's I guess we'll just figure it out as we go, and hopefully, I would like to see us get back to just full normal. But we'll see what happens.
Yeah, we're almost what was the saying about creatures that don't go extinct? It's not always the strongest, but it's the most resilient or the most adaptable, right, creatures that tend to make it. So I think that's testing all of us right now, is our human capacity to reason and solve problems, I think, has been definitely tested. And I think in a lot of ways we'll be more flexible and better for it, but as always, the transitions can be a little rough. So I think that's what all of us are experiencing right now. So
yeah, and I was just thinking, as we get into our topic today, which is going to be on emotional intelligence, one of the things I've really enjoyed about seeing people's faces again, mm-hmm, is that you just don't realize how much the mouth in mid-face expresses,
yeah,
emotion. And you're giving people good news, bad news, all kinds of things, and you just get this deadpan, dead eye pain. It's yeah, hard to read. How did this patient, did they take this well? Did they not take this well? And it's really difficult. And I really enjoy now seeing people smile and their interactions, and that's something I think is very healthy for people to be able to see each other's faces and communicate effectively, because this whole mask over your face thing, especially when you're communicating difficult subjects and things like that, you need the full ability to interact with people. And I, you know, that's something I think is hugely important. So Chris, as let's get into this. You found an article that I thought was pretty good. You pinged it over to me earlier in the week, and it was on emotional intelligence. One of the things that stuck out to me was that emotional intelligence is, you know, is discussed in this article that we're going to kind of use as our muse. It's discussed as a skill.
Yeah.
And here we are, all about, you know, mastering self, mastering craft, and accomplishing life missions. Well, mastering your emotional control and your emotional intelligence is really a skill. Tell me how you found this and what it means to you.
Well, I came across this, and I think you know, I don't know if you would call it an app. It's a website that has an app, but it's called Medium. And I know for busy folks like us and like a lot of people listening, I try to find creative ways to, you know, keep myself stimulated, keep myself sharp, and not just focus on, you know, being a dad and going to work. And so I think things like Medium, you know, once you have like a reading profile, it like will pre-select a lot of things for you. And so I think that's, you know, and once you start reading more and saving more articles, it's very good, like, you know, most modern algorithms are, like putting to the top of your feed stuff similar to what you've read before. So that's kind of how I came across it, kind of my, you know, morning scroll, and it caught my eye. And I think the cool thing about emotional intelligence is it reminds me a lot of a topic near and dear to my heart, my profession, which is leadership. And, you know, like you mentioned, the article portrays emotional intelligence as an acquired skill. Right. And I think some people, me included, in a way, found that interesting, because like leadership, I think some people think that, you know, how you are emotionally, sometimes you're born with it, you know, right? You I'm an angry person, I'm a happy person, you know, I'm a stoic person, which, you know, part of that can be true, but I think that's still more environmental and learned than it is you're born with it. And I think that reminded me a lot of leadership, where a lot of people have this idea that, you know, and I think movies and certain books portray it like, you know, so-and-so was a born leader, you know, from the time they were in kindergarten, they were leading the recess chants, you know, you know, whatever. And so, and I think there are things that maybe, you know, make you an easier or a more natural leader. But in terms of just being born a great leader, I think that that's a complete misnomer. You know, the longer I'm around a big leadership profession. And then I think the same thing about emotional intelligence, right? I think sometimes we grow up in certain circumstances, and it's not until later that we reflect on all those circumstances and those you know, things we experience to be like, oh, you know, actually, I'm kind of a funny person, but because of my life circumstances, I never had the luxury to, you know, be the jokester. You know, I was the oldest kid, and so I was always like, you know, the mini dad or the mini mom. And so it wasn't until I was in college that, you know, I started, you know, sowing my oats, so to speak, and realized like, hey, I'm actually kind of funny, and humor is a big part of who I am. So I think that's what I thought was cool about this approach, that it's another one of those skills like leadership where people think either you have it or you don't. You know, I'm either a person that's going to fly off the handle because, you know, I am just aggressive or however you want to see yourself. But in actuality, you know, like any skill, you can get better at it, you know, or you can be more deliberate about how you react to certain situations. And I think emotional intelligence is something that probably has gotten pushed by the wayside in a lot of ways because of our increasing tech and virtual world we live in, right? Because people are so separated. But, you know, I mean, you see it all the time. You know, people get an email or text and take it the wrong way and ruin actual relationships or work, you know, colleague relationships because you just didn't take it the right way. Right. And so I think emotional intelligence, if nothing else, is more important when you lack those other, you know, context clues of communication, which are missing often in our modern world, I guess, you know. So.
Yeah. And one of the things I didn't always know this, but I've learned it over the years, is that our emotions are, for the most part, if you can stay with your present thought, in other words, you can stay in a, you don't get too wrapped up in the future or the past. One of the things I've noticed is that emotions are not who you are. They're not, it's just a, you know, maybe a adaptive information processing, you know, your brain's algorithm for handling any given situation. And yes, people are more prone to one emotion or another depending on their background. But the more you focus on emotion, you realize you are not your emotion. You can choose, you know, which emotions are helpful and which are not. And I've, you know, kind of read books on this topic and, you know, kind of understand, you know, where, how practical emotional control and emotional analysis can be. But this was a pretty good article because it gave some really salient points that anyone could kind of, you know, just hear a few times and realize, oh, okay, yeah, I don't have to absolutely be my emotions all the time. And I agree with you that it's not a set thing. You know, there may be people that are kind of, you know, have a temper or more hot-headed, you know, have you heard of these kind of terms? But I think it's always something, if a person reflects enough, then they can change their response in any given situation, which of course is kind of the basis of a lot of what we talk about here with Stoicism.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. And I think in an effort to be, you know, more disciplined and more organized in, you know, how we transfer this information to the listeners, one of the things I wanted to do was kind of outline the key points up front and then maybe go over them and then have like a quick review. So almost essay style. So hopefully the things that we've learned, you know, we can transfer better to the people listening to us. Cause I know sometimes you and I get caught up in good conversation. And then if I go back and listen to it, I'm like, well, you know, if I didn't know any context about this topic, I would have liked to, you know, had a intro, a body, and a outro, you know? And so I'm going to do that right now while I'm thinking about it is, so the kind of four main points of this article that we both found, you know, helpful on the topic of emotional intelligence was, number one, let go of unhelpful thoughts, accept painful emotions, handle your mistakes with compassion, and choose values over feelings. And so those, I would say three out of the four are pretty straightforward, and the values over feelings, the last point, I would say maybe in a way is a little bit deeper, but those are the four habits, I guess, that we're going to talk about. This article says that we can improve our emotional intelligence. So the first one, you know, letting go of unhelpful thoughts is I think something that is straightforward, but a lot of us struggle with, right? Because if you're working to get better, if you really screw something up, we all tend to kind of ruminate or stew on it, right? You can't let it go. So, you know, the idea of letting it go makes sense to everybody, but the practice of letting it go sometimes is a little bit more difficult, you know? So, and I think the author gives a good example of how sometimes in our formative years growing up, we're always taught, you know, think before you speak, you know, and you get praise or an attention for, excuse me, thinking hard and doing well in school. And, you know, the author points out that as adults, you know, our success at work largely depends on our ability to think carefully and, you know, creatively. So a lot of these coatings that we grow up with and we do in work, you know, make it even more difficult to just let something go, you know. Right. So so our kind of instincts tell us that we want to, you know, think harder on something and, you know, figure out like what went wrong in the situation and, you know, try to make it better, which is okay to a certain point. But when, you know, you're laying in bed and, you know, you're in this killer loop of, you know, one, you know, I guess off-putting statement you made in an hour-long presentation that you just can't let go. You're like, man, I'm so stupid. Why did I say that? How did that happen? You know, how did that get in there? So I think, you know, thinking hard on things is good, but, you know, you can actually overdo it if it's not helpful, I guess, you know, so.
Yeah, and we've also talked in numerous episodes on auto-suggestion. We've talked with Rex Howes, our, you know, positivity sort of mindset expert. And during those conversations, we talked about situations where, you know, negative thinking, negative emotion, negative thought can be harmful. It can actually physically harm our well-being. It can raise our blood pressure. It can cause us, you know, sleeplessness. And in sometimes, as Rex Howes would say, excessive negativity, negative thoughts, just are self-defeating. And because the things that we want to accomplish in our lives start in our minds first, we need to be careful with thoughts that are negative about ourselves or about outcomes. We must try to maintain imagery in our minds that are moving us in a positive direction, and emotion is a big part of that. In fact, for people that are really trying to pull off very big emotions, projects or results, you often have to have very, you know, strong whys and purpose behind what you're doing, which means you have an emotional stake in potentially in a positive way. And so, again, I was thinking back to Rex Howes and, you know, his attitude, positivity attitudes and things like that. These are, you know, these are examples, and certainly he's a very good example of someone who has realized the value in not dwelling on unhelpful or negative thoughts. Because sometimes they're just not, you know, it's just not beneficial when you're trying to accomplish things. And also, you know, in my medical career, I treat people every day that have anxiety or depression. And I've mentioned this in other episodes before, at how anxiety is really, it's ruminating about things that are not in the present or are in the future that may or may not ever happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's so painful to try to explain that to people, and you see a light bulb go off and they're like, yeah, you're right. I'm kind of wasting my time daydreaming about something. And what that is, it's a lack of awareness to the emotions and unhelpful thoughts that we're allowing our mind, our little monkey mind, to sort of run around on. And I think this is a great point. Let go of unhelpful thoughts.
Yeah, I think I failed to mention that the author of this is an experienced psychologist. And so I think in the article at some point that the author mentions that a lot of this they've observed by trying to help other people through things. So it's not just like one person's opinion. You know, this is through like a practice of trying to help people, you know, get better at this. And one of the things that's mentioned is it takes practice and patience to get better at this, right? So, and one of those practices is letting go of these unhelpful thoughts, even if you know they're true. And so that's where, you know, you're talking about the monkey mind. I think that's where we have to use our critical thinking and our higher thinking skills to get past that monkey mind, right? Because it's saying, you know, hey, this happened, right? This is a fact. This is burned into your memory. So, right. You know, the practice part of it and, you know, the patience is letting go of it, even though you know it's true. You know, it's true. You punted that one into the stands and you can't get it back, right? You know, so that's right. a good analogy, right?
Shame.
So it's like, hey, it is what it is. So,
yeah.
You know, the exercise of it is, you know, how to, you know, with that knowledge, like how to refocus your attention, you know, and go to a positive place,
right,
instead of just making it negative, you know. So, you know, so the ability and the practice and the patience, I think, is good to remember for that first one, you know, with a, you know, letting go of kind of unhelpful things. The second one is accept painful emotions, right? So, another natural thing, you know, another, like you said, monkey mind thing, it's natural to, you know, want to shy away from painful emotions, but in the end, that only burns them deeper. It's just like, you know, with losing a loved one, you know, losing a romantic partner, you know, these are things that a lot of people want to be in denial about, right? I mean, sometimes, you know, I know a lot of us are surprised, like you lose a close friend or a loved one, and you go through a period of being numb, you know, kind of like the stages of grief, you know, denial, you know, where you're, you know, you're running away from it. But we have to realize that if you don't accept them for what they are, it's going to damage you, you know, and
right.
It's going to, and that's when you end up flying off the handle at little things or at work or at home, and you're like, wow, why did I do that? And it's like, well, you have some unsettled things, you know, in there that you haven't accepted. You know, so
yeah, spot on. And one of the things, authors I was thinking about, gurus that I've read in the past that have really good insight into this area, this painful emotion, is Eckhart Tolle. He wrote The Power of Now, and I've mentioned this book, and I think we've even like posted or quoted about it before. But he talks about a concept. The author Eckhart Tolle talks about a concept called the pain body, and this can be a it can be an emotion, it can be a physical pain, it can be a thought. You know, there's all kinds of things that can be a pain body. In this case, we're talking about painful emotions. And what is interesting is Tolle doesn't try to, you know, make it like Pollyanna, where you just, oh, it does, you know, just ignore that it's not there. He actually invites people to sort of meditate and be present with that painful emotion or that pain situation.
Yeah.
And so what he calls it, he calls it examining it and being, he asks people, the skill set that he teaches is be inquisitive about it, explore it from every angle. Don't you, and what that does is, let's say you have something like a death of a loved one, and at first it hits you like a wave and it's just the terrible grief. But then what happens is over time, it keeps coming back like waves at a shore and keeps lapping and, you know, kind of occurring. What he recommends is, instead of trying to fight it, like just bite your bottom lip and be stoic and forget about it, or, you know, bury yourself in work or all the things that people try to do to cope with a powerful, painful emotion, what Tolle would say, just spend quiet time allowing it to come to you, but then be curious about it. Examine it almost like you're looking at a stone or something that you might tangibly have in your hand. Turn it in different ways. How does it feel here? Where in my body does this emotion affect me? Maybe it makes me feel tight in my chest. Maybe it gives me pain in the back of my neck. Maybe it makes my low back hurt. All of these kind of things. He invites people just to embrace what that painful emotion is, rather than try to fight it or deny it. Because it isn't resolving and it's not being addressed or acknowledged if we don't, you know, formally examine it. So he calls that the pain body. So if you ever read The Power of Now or A New Earth, I think is the name of the book, that he covers this a great deal. I strongly, if you have painful emotions in your that you're struggling with, or you have even chronic pain, or you have issues, you know, all kinds of things, traumas that you've experienced, please read one of those books by Eckhart Tolle where he talks about the pain body. It's very powerful imagery, and frankly, they're practical tool sets to deal with very powerful real pain or even painful emotions. So accepting painful emotions, we've already covered that in great detail in other episodes, you know, with work by Eckhart Tolle, and it's definitely key, you know, for emotional intelligence.
Yeah, I think for me, just personally, this is a huge creator of anxiety. You know, just like when I've had personal experiences where, and not even like, you know, I mentioned, you know, dealing with like an emotional loss, but I think for me, I've had a lot of situations that have come up, like in military training or, you know, work situations where there's a lot of similar situations that come up, right? So if one of those similar situations has a bad outcome, what happens is every time that situation comes up again, and you know it's going to come up again, there's built-in anxiety because you haven't, you know, same thing like you were mentioning, like you haven't adequately unpacked it. You know, you haven't truly dealt with it because, you know, you shouldn't be feeling anxiety about something that is routine, you know, but because you had that one time, five times ago, that, you know, it was bad, but you tried to just brush it off, but then you couldn't stop thinking about it every time a similar situation came up, you know.
Right.
And so it's saying that, you know, if the same thing happens, you know, in the same way and you haven't dealt with it, that you're going to have like that same kind of internal emotional response, which is a creator of anxiety.
Right.
You know, so, you know, and this is saying like from a psychological perspective, when you specifically try to escape it without dealing with it, you're teaching your brain that it's dangerous to feel bad like that, you know, which only makes you feel worse because, you know, so it's like it becomes another, you know, vicious cycle that you're training your brain not to deal with things the right way. So another practice thing. So if you want to feel better, you know, in the long term about it, you got to practice being willing to feel bad in the short term and then let it go. But if you don't deal with it, it's just going to fester. So
absolutely.
Number three. So I think these are all spoke to me because as I'm reading them again, you know, I realize why this article was a good one. So number three is handle your mistakes with compassion. You know, it says self-criticism is rarely helpful and almost always makes it harder to move on. You know, and so I think a lot of us that, you know, try to be high performers in a lot of areas of our life or are always trying to get better, it's really hard to deal with because you're your own worst critic, you know,
right.
ruthless on yourself. So so I know that this one is, you know, sometimes like, you know, the psychologist in an article says that the self-criticism can give you the illusion of motivation, but in the end, all it does is discourage you because it just kind of creates a scar that, you know, it is difficult to deal with without just letting go. So acknowledging the mistake for what it is, but just, you know, kind of like the, you know, the serenity prayer, you know, accept the things you cannot change, you know, and you got to move forward. So I know for me, this is a tough one to really practice. So.
Yeah, and we've kind of chatted about various leaders and individuals in the past that made mistakes, or well, I guess what you consider a mistake, or they had, you know, we did the whole series on failure, and a big theme kept coming up over and over. You know, it's really not failure unless you give up, you know, these kind of like kind of quotes and everything, but also it's a learning opportunity, and a lot of times it's simply a more valuable mindset to look at a mistake or a failure. You know, those would be fairly similar. You know, mistake has a slightly different connotation to it, but a failure would be very similar. And it's better, a better mindset would be to approach any type of situation like that and say, look, if especially if it's an, you know, just an honest mistake and you just nothing you could have done about it, maybe a lack of knowledge or just a mis-execution, then it's in the past. And all you can do is simply look at that as a learning opportunity and say, and maybe even look at that and say, wow, that was a big mistake. I could kick myself and tell myself what a bad person I am and what a loser I am. Or I could look at that and say, look, I made a mistake here. What can I learn from it so I don't make that same mistake? And how can I grow from this? I think that's the gist of, you know, handle your mistakes with compassion. The compassion is a compassion to yourself, to not get so hard on yourself that you spend days and days after some event kicking yourself mentally, or, you know, pistol whipping yourself over things that really, you know, there's, you know, it's better just to learn from it and move on.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, I think it alludes to it somewhere in the article where it's talking about sometimes we can be very compassionate with people we love, especially our children or, you know, a close friend when they're dealing with something hard. So it says, you know, be as compassionate with yourself as you can be with the other people that you care about, you know. And so I think that that's another, you know, self-esteem thing. I mean, you shouldn't be so hard on yourself that you're, you know, degrading yourself. So, you know, if you're compassionate with yourself like you would be with other people, you know, you could probably let, you know, some of those things go a lot easier. So.
Yeah, you know, I've been in situations, you know, social situations or work situations where, man, I was like, whatever action I took, you know, just in this hypothetical situation, like hindsight, I look back on it and it was so embarrassing. Like, that is the dumbest thing.
Yeah.
Like, you totally, you know, totally Charlie Brown whiffed that one. You know, you totally missed it and you were insensitive to that person, or you totally missed the cue that was given to you. And it's hard to get rid of those, you know, when you really know and it burns you and it's below your standard you set for yourself. It's really difficult. That emotion, it was something I was thinking about the other day, and it keeps coming up in my head. And I'm like, I finally had to do this and just kind of say, you know, it's more about letting it go, really. But it was kind of just like, look, there's nothing I can do about that. You know,
yeah.
I'm just going to be better next time. I'm going to be different, less inhibited with what I should have said, or, you know, that kind of thing. And so I like this one, handle your mistakes with compassion.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of reminds me, too, of some other, you know, good lessons that we've learned from, you know, leaders and coaches. It's just like, you know, focusing on the process more than the results. You know, like you were saying, it's like if you knew your intentions were true and, you know, you were prepared and something didn't come out the right way, it's like, hey, you know, you can only control so much. So that's another way to be easy on yourself, especially if you know you did everything right. It's just like you screwed something up in the end. You know, have a little compassion as long as you, you know, were prepared and had the right intentions, you know.
Right.
So last one, I'll probably read a few more extended quotes from this one, because like I said, it is like one of the more challenging concepts. It's not as straightforward as the other ones. But number four is choose values over feelings. So it says, you know, the heart of emotional intelligence is the ability to subordinate your feelings to your values. And so at first I was like, okay, I think I'm getting it, but it gives an example that is a simple example, but I think it proves the point. So it says, you know, is your feeling of desire for that bag of potato chips more authentic than your desire to be healthy and fit? Or is your feeling of anxiety and self-doubt more authentic than the evidence that you've given presentations like this dozens of times and they've always been well received? And in another one, it says, is your feeling of excitement at being flirted at by that attractive coworker more authentic than the commitment to your marriage? You know, right. So I think those are all very good, powerful examples where, you know, kind of, I think like we alluded to early on, that your feelings can be like a lie, really. I mean, a feeling is nothing of substance usually, you know, unless you're talking about love or something like that, but that's, you know, more than just a fleeting feeling. So I think this is, you know, talking about the temporary versus the more eternal thing, right? So, you know, your feelings can get you in a lot of trouble, you know, probably more so than they'll actually help you out. You know, when you're thinking with logic and, you know, things that matter and things that value, you know, sometimes if you can subordinate your temporary strong feelings for the bigger picture, you'll be a lot more emotionally intelligent because you won't make, you know, irrational decisions that don't, you know, kind of meet your end state, you know?
Well, first thing, emotions are very valuable. They are a very powerful form of deciphering and filtering through information. Mm-hmm. And the hard part is we have different ways we can logically look at, you know, we can look at any given set of variables, piece them together, and come out with a logical solution. But we can also have, you know, I think this is covered in books like Blink, where they talk about how you see a set image, if you will, a scenario, and you'll have an instant like response. Like, say you see, you know, some hoodlum or something walking down the road that might have a, you know, has an overcoat on and a hoodie pulled over and maybe a bulge in there, you know, and they're in the wrong neighborhood or these kind of things. And you could think, okay, you could instantly get an emotion of fear, maybe, like that person doesn't belong or whatever. But that is a instant snapshot. It's not always correct. And that could have been just somebody that was cold or, you know, they had some reason or they were carrying a loaf of bread under their, you know, coat or whatever. But the reality is that emotion was meant to filter through tremendous amounts of variables, reflect those on our own past history and experiences. You know, it can be something that helps us survive, you know, these types of things. So emotions are very powerful in that sense. And sometimes we don't always have the time to logically, you know, do this analog type, you know, assessment of every situation. However, emotions and feelings can be wrong. They can be wrong when the data that's being, you know, the illusion of what's happening around you and a lot of the things we have are just a construct in our own minds. Mm-hmm. So I like this one, this getting back to the choose values over feelings. The reason I like this one is because those feelings aren't always, when you get this emotion, let's say, okay, this is a scenario I sometimes will see, and I've even experienced myself. Let's say I have a conflict with a loved one or a family member. Mm-hmm. I might feel a sense of dread, maybe even fear, that if I value something, like I believe this is the right thing to do in this scenario, but if I bring this up, it's going to cause a conflict with my loved one. Right? Follow me so far?
Yeah.
So what happens in that scenario is your initial, you might avoid having that value conversation that says this is the way I believe this should be because this is the way my values are. You might avoid that over the fear of something going on. But what's important is when that fear comes up, you clearly know you should choose your values, but the fear, it's better to look at that and say, why am I fearful? Where does that come from? Well, I might, you know, damage the relationship with my loved one. I might, you know, it might cause hardship. I might, you know, there's all kinds of possibilities. And that's what the actual reason for the fear is.
Yeah.
So I think it sometimes it's hard. I mean, we have fear, we have anxiety, we have anger. And there's a lot of these things that a lot of people just want to run away from those emotions.
And
it's hard to do live your values out, which makes you feel incongruent with yourself, makes you feel like you're not being true to yourself if you don't overcome those feelings.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree that, like you mentioned earlier, that feelings have a place in kind of our human existence, right? I mean, they've kept us alive in a lot Absolutely. Of, you know, situations and saved other people or, you know, made you or enabled you to make a snap, you know, judgment on something. But, you know, in the topic of emotional intelligence and focusing, I guess, more broadly on how often your emotions can betray you and sacrifice, like, your values, I think it's a hugely important topic, you know, because, you know, so often, you know, feelings can be all-encompassing in the moment. You know, whether it be anger or you think about like the seven deadly sins, a lot of them, you know, deal with like strong temporary feelings like, you know, gluttony, you know, lust, you know, anger, right. You know, so the same things that might be able to help in you know, temporary situations may sacrifice your long-term values. And, you know, the way the article ends is kind of a cool way to think about it is, you know, little W wants versus capital W wants, you know, and the little W is kind of like the feelings and the capital W is more like the values, you know. And so the examples it gives, it says, you know, we have a lot of temporary little W wants, you know, like the pleasure of, you know, candy or food or, you know, relief of anxiety when you have have your first few shots of vodka, you know, something like that. But, you know, if you way too heavily on those too often, you know, the second part of that is like, you know, if you want to be somebody that's healthy enough, you know, throughout your life to, you know, live to see and play with your grandkids without, you know, getting out of breath or, you know, do high quality work and not rush through it, you know, into your golden years, it's like, you know, I think most of us would take a step back and agree, like, all those, you know, temporary feelings of good that we get from, you know, gluttony and drunkenness, you know, can definitely sabotage something more important, like a long-term, you know, healthy life. And so, yeah, I mean, that's kind of a deeper end to this, but I think, you know, emotions play into many things, you know, eating, relationships, fill in the blank. But, you know, and I think this is kind of cool. Another reason why I like this article ended with a Viktor Frankl quote who had, you know, one of the epic books we covered. But, you know, he says that between stimulus and response, there's a space. And in that space is our power to choose our response. And in our response lies our growth and our freedom. And so a deep way to end it. But I think, you know, you look at how many good and not so good decisions are made, you know, based on either exerting or controlling emotions. And so I think all these encompassed together just show the importance of, you know, emotional intelligence in everything we do. And, you know, sometimes it requires a little practice and discipline. But the empowering part of it is, like a lot of other skills or habits we talk about, you can get better at it if you just think about it, right? You know, about how you react emotionally in certain situations and how that's probably not serving, you know, your greater good. But yeah, so I thought this was a good, valuable exercise to unpack.
Yeah, well said, Chris. Thanks for bringing this topic up, the topic of emotional intelligence. Let's definitely add the link to the full article, and thanks to that author for sharing these thoughts and this muse with our podcast. And once again, if you are enjoying this, please go to your favorite, you know, podcast listening app, whether it be Stitcher, iTunes, or Podbean, types. Just go to your favorite one, you know, put a little like in there for us, maybe a little, you know, comment on the show. We'd love to hear back from you. And Chris, look forward to chatting with you again next week. Take care.
Yeah, sounds good.